Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Friends, welcome back to Investigating Angel. I guess this is our first official episode, even though it's not technically on any specific episode of Angel.
It's a pre-pilot.
But I am so excited for this because we didn't do this with Becoming Buffy, and I really, really wish we had because I felt like our first episode was like a lot of introduction before we actually got into anything. And this is just going to be so fun. And I'm sure a lot of you are kind of like, what all do we need to talk about before we actually get into the show? Let me tell you, friends, 10 pages of notes worth, a lot of good stuff. And as I was telling Leia before we first started out, there's a little something something at the end. And I'm excited to share with you guys because it's something I didn't even know. So,
and I don't even know. So we're going to see my reaction. Live. Yeah.
Well, I'll see your reaction. They're going to hear your reaction.
Well, she'll see my reaction. You'll hear
you're gonna
it.
Be like, you're going to be stunned silent. You're just going to sit there and be like, okay, Leia, say something. No, but we are so excited to talk about this. I'm thrilled to just like actually get into the beat of Angel and talk about things. And I'm excited to also start talking about the episodes as well. But we both felt like we needed to have something beforehand because this is a spinoff. And so I think it's really important to kind of go, okay, where have the characters come from? Why did they decide to do a spinoff? Like there's obviously a reason. And I think sometimes it's like, oh, they decided to do a spinoff because of money or because like this character is popular. But I think in the case of Angel, it's one of the times where the spinoff actually is extremely successful. Like Angel went on to be its own thing. And the character needed and deserved a spinoff. So
agreed.
All right. So the first thing is, why do a spinoff? And in order to talk about that, we're going to kind of go back to the very beginning, back to the casting of season one. And I was kind of looking up a few things, Leia. Maybe you can help me out with this. But when you watch season one and kind of part of season two, it really looks like Xander was poised to be the main love interest for Buffy. And I don't know that there's ever anything that like – I never found any quotes or any like trivia or anything that said, yes, this was what we had planned for Xander.
I think the thing that I've heard the most about that is like it's clear that they were looking to make Xander the main love interest because you can like – you can still see the promo shots with like the three of them. And then there's some with Xander and Buffy only. But I think the thing that I've heard the most was that Xander was supposed to be the main love interest for like the first few episodes until the episode Angel, I'm pretty sure. And then I think it was just the chemistry between David and Sarah that was just kind of like, oh, like I think there's a quote by David Boreanaz where he said that, you know, they started out and they got into it and then the chemistry just kind of exploded and then they started writing the story based off of that chemistry. So
yeah,
I'll have to find that quote, but I think that's what happened. I'm pretty sure.
It's kind of hazy when you go back there and trying to kind of look at things. You kind of have to piece together a lot of stuff. But I know we've talked a lot about it, but it was David Greenwald and even the network that really wanted a love interest for Buffy or even just wanted Angel to be on the show. They didn't seem really sold on Xander because why would they look for another love interest if Xander was what was supposed to be like who Buffy was going after.
I think it was the audience reaction to David and Sarah as well.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Well, and I mean, even watching season one, like Angel is not in the season very much. You start off with season two, though, and you're like, whoa, this guy is like now part of the main credits and he's here a ton. So like what happened? And the network was like, hey, in order to renew the show to Joss, they were like, we want to see more of Angel and we want there to be an actual like romance between Buffy and Angel. We really like where this is going. And Joss was initially not very happy about it because this was kind of against what he wanted it to be. Like, he wanted vampires to be strictly evil, and Angel kind of was a little bit of a disruption of that with his soul, and it kind of threw him off. So it's really interesting to note that from the very beginning, like, Angel kind of changed the trajectory of the show for the better, but he also not only did he influence it, but he also his character just kind of grew and enhanced even Buffy's own arc in a way that I think that nobody really anticipated. So in the casting for Angel, like, I think the sheet even says, like, they were supposed to look for, like, the dreamiest, the most handsome, like, the most out-of-world guy you could possibly find. And I know the casting director was incredibly intimidated, was like, how in the world did we even find someone like that? And Joss Whedon says this about the casting of David. He says, inevitably, you look at one guy and say, oh, we'll use him again, and you never do. Or you go, oh, the dynamic between these two is what works, and it doesn't. Or there's a different dynamic that you never expected. That being said, it was clear to me when I first sort of devised this Buffy pilot that Angel was the one character who is bigger than life in the same way that Buffy was, a kind of superhero, and I knew as the dark, mysterious love interest that he had the potential to be a breakout character, but I also knew he had this potential to go away after three episodes. Then we found David Boreanaz. So it sounds like Joss was like, this could be a really interesting character, but he was like, it depends upon who we find, because a lot of the stuff that they used to describe Angel was a lot of physical attributes. So it wasn't until they had the chemistry between Sarah, and then they also saw, hey, like, David can act and he's super charming, that I think they realized we can actually go somewhere with this guy. So then, you know, season two rolls around, the network's like, hey, we want the show to lean heavily into Bangel. And I think they even said, like, we aren't going to renew the show unless we have more Bangel, because they, to them, they're like, this is the hook. This is what's going to keep audiences coming around, which I'm like, okay, like, I think that Buffy on her own is pretty good too, but I understand why, especially for the time. And obviously season two is fantastic. So then Angelus appears and the show became all about that. And it's really interesting because Joss even wasn't prepared for season two to be fully about Buffy and Angel. He even talks in multiple quotes. He's like, oh, it's going to be, we're going to make it about Spike and Drew. But then once again, the chemistry and then the way things were progressing with Bangel, surprise and innocence happened. And then it was like, oh, we're going down the Angela storyline. And it became one of the most, like, the cornerstone for the rest of the show. Marty Noxon says, the audience reaction to Angel kind of made it a necessity for a spinoff, but one of the strongest reasons is David Boreanaz emerged as a true leading man and one whom I feel had a kind of energy and bearing that very few guys on television had. He's a man, not a kid, and there wasn't a lot of competition out there for a manly, funny, versatile leading guy, so the WB was itching for a vehicle for him. The other thing is that we were in danger on Buffy of getting into a rut. The relationship between Buffy and Angel had served the show so well, and for that reason, you keep trying to extend it beyond its natural possibilities and people start getting tired of it. Yet at the same time, you don't want to let it go. Basically, spinning Angel off served both shows to get him his own series while giving Buffy a whole new world of possibilities. Which is so true, right? Like, and they talked about how after season two, they were really nervous about, like, okay, we're bringing Angel back, but, like, if we have them fully together, we kind of don't have anywhere to go with that. And then they're realizing, okay, we don't know that there's necessarily longevity in keeping them together because it doesn't make it interesting. But also, like, we've created this whole idea of, like, we can't have them together because she's a slayer, he's a vampire.
Well, I feel like if they had decided not to do the spinoff, then he would have just remained dead after
season
two. He would have never come back because it would have been like obstacle after obstacle, and then it would have just been unrealistic to keep having this character around just for the sake of having him around, like, just to be Buffy's love interest.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then, you know, it was the scene where Angel's possessed by the female ghost and I Only Have Eyes for You that sold Joss on David's ability to be layered. And that's when Joss was kind of like, oh, this guy can handle his own spinoff. And that's when he started, like, coming up with the idea of doing Angel. And he actually approached David around the time that they were shooting Becoming Part One. And David has this really funny quote where he's talking about how he's like wearing the wig and he's trying to practice his horrible Irish accent. And he's like so nervous. He's like, I'm going to get fired, when Joss asked him to his office. And Joss is like, hey, we want to do a spinoff. And David's like, that's cool, but I cannot master this Irish accent. Like, David's so funny because in all his quotes, he seems like very much like in the moment type of guy. Like, he doesn't like to think ahead. He doesn't like think about the past. He's just fully in whatever moment he's in. And so at that point, he was like, yeah, cool. Okay, spinoff, whatever. But like, let me get through this right here. So I think when they were like getting ready to kill him off at that point, they were like, okay, we want to go ahead with this. We want to bring him back for next year. Kelly A. Manners, who's a producer, said this: I think it was much easier to sell Angel than Buffy because the characters had already been established. The network knew what they were going to get. Of course, Angel went in a different direction. A vampire with a soul opens up a detective agency. It's kind of humorous to think back. We shot our presentation in 3 days and it sold the show. We didn't spend a lot of time and money on it. It was a 20-minute quickie and that's all the network needed to see, and we were on our way. We didn't mind being the child of Buffy. Buffy was mothership, and we all realized that. We had the same showrunners, so we knew what we were in for. So like, they didn't have time to shoot a pilot for pilot season, because by the time they decided they were going to do this show, it was already like in the middle. It was the end of the season. And so they were like, all right, they shot the presentation. The network was like, boom, sold. They saw how Buffy was doing. And then they actually gave them 12 episodes right off the bat. So they were like, hey, yeah, great, you have 12 episodes, and then we'll kind of reevaluate after that. And they hadn't even written any scripts or shot anything other than the presentation. And so they began to work on how Angel would leave Sunnydale and Buffy in season 3, because they knew he needed to come back. And then David Greenwalt tells this funny story about how like they like were all prepared to do this. They had talked to David Boreanaz, and then his agent, David Boreanaz' agent, calls them and is like, hey, so I want a new price for Buffy season 3, and I don't even want to talk about the spinoff basically until we come to this agreement. And they're all starting to freak out because they've already gotten the green light for everything. And Joss said, David, I would like you to call Mr. Boreanaz' agent. I want you to tell them that, in fact, we're going to spin off another character. His name is Bob Finuti, Demon Hunter, and we're going to make him up and spin him off. So they did that. And the agent immediately came back with, no, we didn't mean anything we said. Which I was like, yeah, that would stress me out too. Like, yeah. I mean, I no shade on David and his agent, because I mean, they were totally in a position to negotiate. They had a big star on their hands. But it's just interesting to think that, like, if Joss hadn't been quick on his feet, there's a possibility that they wouldn't have had the spinoff because David would have been too expensive.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yep. David's playing hardball, man. It was probably his agent. The agent's like, hey, David, let's do this. We could probably get more money. And David's like, sure, man, whatever you want to do. I'm too worried about the fact that I have to do a naked scene in, like, Beauty and the Beast or Faith Over Trick. No, he probably didn't care at all.
No, he loved it.
He was probably more worried about having to bring his Irish accent back on Angel.
He's yeah. Like, oh,
I will come back as long as I don't have to do that Irish accent and wear a wig.
Oh, my God. Amends.
I know, and then amends happens. And they're like, all right, well, we're going to give you a mustache.
Oh, God, not the mustache.
Oh, my gosh. He looks like one of those 70s, I don't know what they call it, like 70s movie stars that would like have like this. Just like a guy in like a 70s movie, because you know how they had this massive mustache with like a giant like cigar hanging out of his mouth. Mm.
What, not like a mafia like, guy?
Yes, sure. Someone that sells like a drugs mob or boss? Something. Sure. A mob boss.
Yeah, but okay, let's remember that was Angelus. And Angelus, vampires aren't supposed to grow hair. So how did Angelus get that mustache?
I don't even know. Like, it just, yeah, I mean, like, how do they have boners? How do they have sex? Like, oh, you know, we could go down that rabbit hole. You know, yeah. Angel's like, I can't breathe. But then, you know, Spike chokes out Drusilla in Becoming Part One or Becoming Part Two. So, like, oh my God. You know.
Spike is special. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
He's a special little angel baby.
Wait, Spike doesn't exist. This is Angel's podcast.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Spike who? Who is that? Who is
exactly,
she?
Exactly. Spike. What? Who is she?
Who is she?
I don't know her. Okay. All right. Back to Angel. So yes. What makes Angel so compelling? What is it that made them want to give him his own spinoff? And kind of tying in with that, what is the mission statement of Angel? So Tim Minear, who ended up becoming the co-executive producer of Angel, and side note, we will talk more about him later on because he absolutely is pivotal in shaping Angel. And we've talked about how we feel like his voice is often even more important than Joss's when it comes to writing Angel. He has this to say about what he thinks is kind of the heart of Angel, the series. He says, these days, vampires are viewed as noble, tortured creatures that are somehow above us. That has a lot to do with Anne Rice. People can relate to feeling apart and sometimes above, yet somehow not part of the rest of the world. I think that's pretty much a universal feeling, particularly for people going through adolescence. There's something romantic about not dying. It seems like a way to give a character this huge gift, but then make it ugly because they don't really deserve it. It has something to do with alienation. That's what it is for Angel. Here's this guy who really wants to be a part of the world, but he can't be yet. And then Joss says this. Joss says, any great fantasy has to contain your greatest wish and your darkest fear. The idea of a vampire is someone who is cut off from the rest of humanity, which I think everybody feels like sometimes. He is cut off and shunned and at the same time exalted. Obviously, Buffy is more about Buffy than it is about vampires, but I think there's a tinge of that there that people can't get enough of. I saw Angel as the second half, somewhat more adult version of the same metaphor as Buffy, which is personal demons as actual demons with horns. But it's not a high school humiliation, alienation kind of thing. It was more of an adult, I'm walking in a grown-up world, 20-something, 30-something setting. We dealt a lot with addiction as a metaphor because that's Angel. He was sort of a reformed drunk, so he was fighting his way back to something resembling humanity and helping others do the same. We knew it would be a little darker, but it wouldn't be one of those relentlessly all blue colored, angsty, I track a serial killer every week shows, which I thought was really interesting. And that really resonated with me. And maybe it's because I'm one of those 20 something, 30 something year olds. But I feel like now TV has become so much more inclusive. Like you can find shows about single women in their 50s and 60s. You can find shows about, you know, older married couples. You can find shows about adolescents. You can find shows about, you know, like even Friends was about single 20, 30 something year olds. And so I think that now there is more of that. But back then, I don't think, and they have a quote where they talk about there's just not a lot for people in that age gap. And Joss talks about how like, oh, and I think this is the next quote that I'm going to read, but Joss talks about how like he realized there was a pivotal point of your life when you're in your early 20s after high school, that's actually almost more important than when you're in high school because you're now on your own and you have to formulate your own ideas without having the influence of people over you. He says, one of the ideas we had pitched the network for Angel was the idea of creating a mythos for 20-somethings because there is none. Adolescence is very charged in American mythos. Middle age is very charged in American mythos. 20-somethings, nobody cares. We said it would be interesting to investigate the fears and growth and the things that happen to you in your 20s, which are just as important as any other decade in your life, but doesn't really exist, mythically speaking, in American fiction. What we realize is that there is this passage in your life during which you create the person you're going to be. When you're a teen, you're in a structured environment where they're telling you what to do. When you're in your 30s, you're dealing with the choices you made, but it is in fact in your 20s when you've made a lot of important life decisions. It's when you first learn how to be a grown-up. And I was like, That is such a good way of describing the show. And I think that so many people miss that. And I think the beauty of the character of Angel is that his journey and his story made sense for a spinoff. Like, obviously, we see through, like, I think what Marty was saying about how, like, the network was like, oh, yeah, we've got this leading man. Like, we want a spinoff. And I think that was definitely, like, a big part of why they were even thinking about a spinoff. But I think the fact that, it wasn't just David was charming. It was the fact that, like, Joss was like, we have a story we can actually tell with this character. And David or Angel really outgrew Buffy in a lot of ways. Like if he had stayed on to Buffy and they'd try to enhance his character even more, there's a possibility that it would have clashed too much. And I don't mean like clash with Buffy in like a literal sense, but they wouldn't have been able to give as much screen time to him as he needed because it would have been too easy for it to overtake Buffy's own story. So in a lot of ways, it needed its own space.
Yeah. I think the first inkling of this that we see, like the first episode would probably be the episode Angel, because it's this character that's already lived all of these years that has such a rich history that we get a, like a glimpse into in that episode. So it's like, and then they expand on it in season two, and it's like they can continue to expand on it in his own show. And yeah, it's definitely, unlike all the other characters, Angel already came with a story.
Yes.
That needed to be told. Whereas every other character, they started off on Buffy as like, you know, new young people, and their story got built on the show. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely think that Angel needed his own show, because just like Buffy, he has like main character energy.
Yeah, 100%. Tim Minear says, what I like about the whole idea of Angel is the concept of redemption and this idea of recovery as well. You look at the show on its face and wonder how anyone can relate to it. It's sort of about 20-somethings, but the lead is 240 and change. The truth is, here's a guy who's choosing to be good. He's got stuff in his past that he's got to make up for. The lead character has not only got a past, but he's got a huge past, and it's horrible. So the darkness appealed to me. And then Marty Noxon talks about how like early on, there's like this real focus on addiction. They saw him kind of struggling with his desire to drink blood again. And they like that, they really hinted at that in the plot. And at one point it was going to be much more of a storyline born out of the season three finale when Angel has to drink Buffy's blood. And then from that, they were going to kind of posit that his addiction and his need was like really heightened. He's kind of coming off of that. But they threw that out pretty early on because they realized that like the whole drinking from Buffy was kind of too far away for where they were trying to go. It wasn't part enough of his story for people to relate with what was going on, like on the show Angel. But they kind of kept with the idea that like the addiction had been reawakened, the desire to feed was back, and it was eating away at him. But in order to make that clear connection to it being like Buffy and even his past victims, it was kind of hard to make that connection onto the show, which I thought was really interesting. And I definitely like, you can kind of see it leading from that, from season three of Buffy. You're like, okay, I see exactly where they're going. But then once you start into the show, it's like not really addressed a whole lot. And then Joss says this, which I think is really kind of like the heart of the show. He says, part of what we wanted to say with this show is that redemption is difficult. It takes a long time, and then there isn't always a goal in sight. You just have to keep trying to do right and trying to make up for what's gone before. And if you make it easy, if you say, find the golden key, that's kind of a false hope. And the thing about a hero is that even when it doesn't look like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, he's going to keep digging just because that's who he is. And I think that's Angel right there. All right, so let's talk a little bit about kind of like the transition from Buffy, because obviously when you're going to do a spinoff, I would imagine, and from what I've read, it seems like there's a lot of trepidation because spinoffs generally don't do well. They'll maybe have a season or two and then they just fizzle out. And then there was also a very, very big concern, kind of like what we talked about. Buffy was very hinged on the Angel relationship. And so it was not just is Angel like going to make it as a spinoff? But it was like, is Buffy going to make it without Angel and without Angel being like that core relationship? And I think for a lot of fans, that's still something they really wrestle with. So many people I know that watch the first three seasons of Buffy and are like, I don't want to watch the rest because it's so hinged on that dynamic. David Boreanaz says, I didn't see the Buffy connection as either a burden or a problem. I just saw that they were going to be compared because Angel came out of Buffy. There was really no way to control that, and I didn't look to control any of that. I saw it as a blessing to be able to have the show when Buffy came out, and to have a character evolve into its own show was remarkable and very fortunate for me. And Sarah Michelle Gellar says, I can't say enough amazing things about David Boreanaz. In the 3 years we worked together, we never had so much as a disagreement, and I mean that's unbelievable. We worked so well together. We could gauge each other's moods. So for me, it was very daunting to be without him. And there was that concern that, you know, part of the reason that Buffy worked was Angel. And you got this feeling of, what if I can't do it on my own? What if I need David? But it was a very exciting time for him as well. And luckily, I thought it was a good challenge for me, which I'm like, yeah, 100% girl, that would be very scary. And then if you guys look at, like, it's still on YouTube, you can look up some of the interviews between the two of them where people are asking him these questions. And there's a really cute one that I was looking at where Sarah was like, it's really incredibly scary to be split up from each other because we've always had each other. And then the interviewer asked David, was like, what do you think the driving force will be on the show, Angel? And Sarah quickly jumps in and says, me.
Me.
And, David, without missing a beat, is like, yes. And it always will be.
Yeah.
So cute.
They've always really maintained that idea that, like, Buffy is a driving force.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it was like the Teen Choice Award that year, too. When she had her acceptance speech, she was like thanking everybody. And then she says, this is to my angel. I miss you already, David.
Wow. I know.
But it's so sweet. And I think even like his first day of filming, she showed up on the lot to surprise him.
Yeah.
Like,
that was such a cool story to hear.
So sweet.
Yeah. That's why it worked. That is why it's that relationship and that chemistry between those two people that made the character of Angel work. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice to hear that they both, like, acknowledge that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I mean, it's cute today to, like, to this day, like, whenever there's some sort of celebration of Buffy or Angel on either one of their Instagram platforms, you see them both going and commenting on each other's stuff, like, always my Angel. And
it's so,
like,
cute.
It's so sweet. It's just, it's really precious. And I think they, I think not only do those characters mean so much to both Sarah and David, but I think they realize how much they mean to the fans too. So just keeping that alive. But I mean, at the end of the day, and that's not to, like, discount the other four seasons of Buffy, because I think they're still great in their own right and stuff. And even the seasons of Angel, where Buffy's not really so much at the forefront. I think that having that solid foundation just absolutely made the shows so that much greater, you know? Absolutely. So the writers on Buffy, as well as Sarah herself, were excited to be able to do something new without the Bangel romance, as they felt they had more freedom and wouldn't get stuck into a rut. So, all right. So let's talk a little bit about the format of Angel. And we're going to try and be really careful about spoilers, because obviously we haven't, like, actually gotten into the show. So this is mildly spoilery, but I don't think it gives away much of the plot or anything. But a lot of people complain about Angel season one, and, like, I'm curious about your thoughts with this, because they say that it's kind of slow, it's hard to get into, and I've always kind of been curious as to why that is. And so when I was reading, it's the book Slayers and Vampires, which a lot of these quotes come from. I highly recommend reading it if you're super interested in any of this stuff. And I'm piecing together that I think a lot of the reason why season one was so choppy, there's a couple different factors, but one of the reasons is because they were trying to make it episodic. They did not want it to be serialized until they said around episode 9, they realized, oh, this is not going to work. The show was trying to be serialized. It was trying to focus on the characters. And instead, what they were trying to do for the first few episodes was make it more about guest characters and less about the main characters themselves. And it was going to be more of, like, okay, so, like, Law and Order, like, we're going to deal with a victim. So we're going to go and help that victim. And then that's going to be it. And then that's the end of the episode and stuff. And Tim Minear talks about how the switch happened during the episode Eternity. He says, you can see in that episode, Joss and David and me and everybody else saying, let's stop doing these closed ended detective stories and start making it about Angel. I remember Joss saying after watching the cut of this episode, we have to start making it about Angel and his friends in the way that Buffy is about Buffy. Whenever they would break an episode of Buffy, it would start to become too much about the mechanics of the plot. Joss would always come back to the question, where's the Buffy of it? What is the story we're telling? What is that saying about her? What is it doing to either further her character, or how is this a roadblock to her character? What does she learn about herself? What does the story need to be told, or why does the story need to be told about this character? Often whole stories would be thrown out and we'd start them from scratch because we didn't have the Angel of it. Once we use that as a guiding principle, we could always come back to what was important. Joss was absolutely fanatical about saying every minute of airtime has to have something to make the audience love these people. And I really love that. Charisma Carpenter even talks about how she, like, it was a real struggle for her because she was like, all these guest stars are getting these juicy parts in these episodes. And she's like, I mean, that's great for them, but she's like, I want to be able to see like the relationships growing between Angel and Cordelia and Doyle. Like, I want to see these characters like actually growing and delving into that. And once she says, like, she believes that once they started doing that, the show actually began to flourish. And I totally agree with that.
I agree also. And I think that Angel over the years actually managed to do character building and character relationships a lot better than even Buffy did.
I agree.
Which is like crazy because Buffy has had 3 extra years on them.
Yeah. And I think that it got so serialized to the point where there wasn't even really very much like season arcs anymore. Mm-hmm. It was just one long continuous story, and you had moments where characters would have arcs and characters would peak or they'd continue on or whatever. And so, yeah, it's just very interesting. And I think people were expecting something a little bit more like Buffy. And so on your first watch or whatever, it can feel choppy because you're like, wait, where's the season? Where's the big bad? Where's that? And it's like, no, it's just a different feel and different format.
I think it kind of works a little bit in the first few episodes because you have that like feel of, it's like a detective show and Angel's by himself and he's slowly collecting these people around him, but he's still kind of, you know, a loner. And that really is how Angel is in the beginning. And you can also tell when they kind of switch gears and go, okay, well, this is not a detective show anymore. This is now going to be about, you know, like they start including like nice little character moments between them that kind of start to establish the relationships. And you can see where like the gears shift, but that's like, I think it makes sense because that's as Angel starts to like open up a little bit and not be so much of a loner. And he starts to collect more people around him that connect him more to his humanity. And like, we'll see this as we go through the episodes, but I really enjoy season one for those reasons, because it really just feels like Angel goes to LA not knowing what's going to happen. And that's exactly what we see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it makes sense once you get back with the overall story. I think it's kind of like Buffy season one too, where like you don't fully appreciate it until you've seen the whole story and you've watched, like you have the whole picture. Yeah. And then you go back and you're like, oh, this actually lays a really good foundation. And I think Angel season one is the same. It's very underrated for sure. All right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the inner workings. So for instance, the crew, and this is where stuff starts to get a little juicy. So unfortunately, we all know the stuff with Joss that's come out in recent years. And it's really interesting going back. I think this book, Slayers and Vampires, where I got a lot of this information, was written several years ago before all of this stuff came out. And you can tell with certain quotes and the things that people are talking about, specifically Charisma Carpenter, like they're very polite in how they say things, but you can tell they're trying to say more. And even like going back and reading some stuff, you're like, oh, I wonder if that was a product and a problem because of who Joss is, who we now know he is. So just keep that in mind as we're talking about some stuff. So they actually borrowed a ton from Buffy when it came from the crew. So Kelly A. Manners was brought in as a producer from Buffy, where he was a co-producer. He became known as like the show's money man. Ian Wolfe was hired as first assistant director, and production designer was Stuart Blatt. They took the prosthetics makeup artist from Buffy and had the production designer from their oversee Angel as well. So the set, they actually shot on the Paramount lot, which is a real movie set, which was a huge step up because Buffy was still being shot in this like giant warehouse. And yeah, like it's kind of crazy that Angel had like such a like cushy situation. Much of Angel was also shot on location in Los Angeles, where it is also set. Los Angeles is the first words spoken in the premiere episode and the cityscape in the first image seen in the opening credits. Joss Whedon said, "It is set in Los Angeles because there are a lot of demons in LA and a wealth of stories to be told." Marty Noxon has expanded on this explanation, saying Los Angeles was the place that Joss picked for a very specific reason. There's a lot of preconceptions about what the place is, but there are a lot of truths. It's a pretty competitive, intense town where a lot of lonely, isolated, and desperate people end up. It's a good place for monsters. And I think it's so fun, like, them picking Los Angeles, especially after the episode Anne on Buffy. Just, I mean, even like we'll talk about the parallels of Buffy and Angel's lives, like Buffy running to Los Angeles when she's feeling alone and depressed and discouraged and stuff, and how she kind of like picks herself off her feet. It's kind of mirrored, and this is kind of where Angel's at right now when he runs to Los Angeles as well.
And also, speaking of Anne, some of the shots from the Angel intro are scenes from Anne.
Which I like the
episode,
adore.
Which is so cool because that episode definitely has – like that episode could have been an episode in Angel the series easily.
It just the feels feel of so it, much like it. Yes.
Yeah.
In the essay Los Angeles, the City of Angels – or the City of Angel from the essay collection Reading Angel, the TV spinoff with a soul, Benjamin Jacob explores why Los Angeles in particular should be important to the series. Jacob suggests several explanations. First, the name connection, City of Angels. Second, the double-sided nature, the other side of the stereotypical Sunshine City, Beach Boys, and Walt Disney. Third, American noir was originally Los Angeles genre. Angel was originally conceived as supernatural noir. Noir had continued investigation of the dark city, a place of regression and darkness as a counterpoint to the city's promise of progress and civilization that had begun under William Blake and Charles Dickens. So Carrie Meyer, who was the production designer on Buffy, actually designed the sets for the pilot, which is really interesting because, I mean, it's not just, oh, we're designing the sets for the pilot. Like, he designed basically the backbone, the foundation of what would continue on through Angel. And he did the pilot, and then he recommended his friend Stuart Blatt to take over, which I was like, well, that doesn't seem fair. It seems like Carrie did all the hard work, and his friend's like, well, thanks for that. Stuart says this. He says, I loved Carrie's design for it, speaking specifically of like Angel's, like the office areas and his living quarters. He says, I love the fact that in the downstairs, Angel lived in this sort of janitor workman's closet area. So that was kind of gritty and mysterious and played into his vampire qualities of it being dark and mysterious and somewhat like a tomb. The other great thing is they had built a real working elevator that even though we built the whole set on the floor, it insinuated it was two floors. In other words, they built the set on one floor. So the upstairs, the investigations part of it was one floor. And then you get into the old cage elevator and it would start to move down in a pit in the ground, then cut and you'd pick it up on the other side when they raise the elevator up and then they'd bring him up to the next level. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I love that set. That is probably I love the set in season two. We're not gonna spoil, but I think my favorite setting of like Angel is season one's
I agree.
The offices. It's just so cool.
Yeah. I totally agree. Apparently the elevator was very, very slow moving. So one of the things Joss was, he'd be like, to the Bat Cave. And then they would get into the, he said it was like a calendar turning because it was so slow. So it just like slowly creaked down.
Like just slow-mo to the Bat Cave.
Angel's just
300 years later.
Making uncomfortable eye contact as he's like inching down. So funny. I wish there was outtakes of that. That'd be so funny.
Oh, my God.
All right. So talking about the writers, and then this is where it truly starts to get juicy. So I think you know where I'm going with this, Leia. So Joss was – we talked about this the other night. I was like, Leia. I couldn't believe all the stuff I had learned. So Joss was obviously the showrunner for both shows, but David was kind of like – David Greenwalt was kind of the pseudo showrunner as well. There's like so many Davids. There's David Fury, David Boreanaz, David Greenwalt. Marty Noxon, David Fury, and Doug Petrie, who were writers from Buffy, were super instrumental in shaping and writing Angel for especially the first year. And this was mostly because obviously they had to write scripts and stuff before Buffy season three even finished. So they kind of needed to have like people on top of it. But it was also because Joss didn't want to hire new staff for Angel. He wanted the Buffy writers to write for Angel. And apparently this is something he tried to do again on Firefly. He tried to make the Buffy and Angel writers write for Firefly. And it just didn't work. And I mean, there's probably multiple reasons why, and we were kind of like speculating on what it is. I think budget was probably a huge part of it. But I think, Leia, you brought up that you think it was more of like control.
Yeah, I feel like it's more, these are people that he's kind of established a dynamic with, let's put it that way. Sure. And we all know that Joss was, you know, always rewriting scripts. You've given examples of this on Becoming Buffy. So I feel like maybe, yeah, maybe a part of it was that he already had all of these people that knew how he worked and that worked the way that he liked them to work. And he just didn't want to have to bring new people on that were going to ask questions, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's totally fair. Well, and it's also really interesting because this kind of corresponds right in, obviously, with season 4 of Buffy. And I was kind of doing research for our episode, The Freshman. And it's interesting because there's like a quote where I forget who it is that's talking about this. It might have been Marty Noxon. It was somebody else. They're saying that like basically Joss never asked his staff for ideas on what to write next. It was him and David Greenwalt for the first 3 seasons of Buffy. But then once David came over to Angel, Joss was forced to start relying on his staff more. And like that's when Marty kind of got promoted a little bit to being like his number one woman. And then he started like actually being able to like delve into the staff and then be able to give input and stuff. And so I think that probably also corresponded a little bit with what was going on here with Angel too, where it was like, well, I'm used to just having the people that I want to do my stuff with. I don't know. It's just like it's a repeated pattern for sure. Yeah. And I think that's why it's so important that Tim Minear was hired on at this point, because Tim brought in a really fresh perspective. He mm-hmm. wasn't part of the old blood. He had new ideas. And I think the show was able to very much make its own path apart from Buffy because of Tim. I think it would have suffered if it was too much of the Buffy writers.
I think so too. I was going to say that as well, because it's almost like you're asking people to write for Buffy that has a very particular feel and yeah. style of writing and yeah. voice. They know the voices of the characters on that show, but Angel's something completely different. And if you want it to succeed as its own thing,
yes.
You kind of have to change the feel and the voices of the characters, and it can't be the same because then it's just Buffy 2.0. Yeah. And yeah, and I feel like Tim Minear, sorry.
It's Minear. I think we're butchering it. I think I said Minear too. Sorry. And sorry, I think Tim.
What was so great, I mean, from all the quotes that I've read from Tim Minear, he not only understood the characters as they were fresh on Angel, but he also understood where they came from. So it was almost like the best of both worlds without him having that, like, not bias, but without him having already spent all that time getting used to the writing on Buffy. So I feel like what he did really well was, like I said, while like still taking into account all of the growth and everything that occurred on Buffy and the impact that happened on Buffy, he was able to write these characters as like brand new characters with their own voice and their own style, which I don't think would have really happened if it was just, you know, having Buffy writers just continue to write, you know, a show like Buffy. I don't think it would have done well whatsoever.
I agree. And I think that's another aspect to why season 1 sometimes feels like it's almost 2 separate seasons. Because yeah. I think that they were wrestling with that with the first half, on top of it trying to be more episodic. They were trying to figure out a voice for it, and you had Buffy writers writing it. And so it was kind of – it just wasn't working. The show wasn't being what it was meant to be. It was fighting it, you know? Which is interesting because Tim Minear says – he goes, I have to say that the first several months of working on Angel were horrible. Buffy was going into its 3rd or 4th year. Writers were brought in on Angel, and yet they did the easiest thing they could. They had the Buffy staff write the first batch of episodes. It made sense, but we felt like we were the redheaded stepchildren at Angel. We were completely shut out. They had already started working on stories from the show and scripts with some of the Buffy writers, which in truth made perfect sense. This was a group of writers that Joss and David had taken years to cast to find out who worked and who didn't. By the time Angel started up, you had the varsity version of the Buffy writers' room. They felt, David and Joss, more comfortable, I think, working with those people that they'd been working with for years and they knew, as opposed to this new group. And then mm-hmm. David Greenwalt says this. He goes, I know the writers were very pissed off. We used to go to Joss's house and watch Buffy occasionally live, and you couldn't speak at all during the show, which I wish people would follow now. He invited all these people to the Angel premiere, but he didn't invite any of the Angel writers. He didn't do it on purpose, but people were insulted they weren't invited. And I like not to project too much, but I'm like,
how is that not on purpose?
Yes. How is it not on purpose? How do you do
that not on purpose?
Right. And even if, let's say that it wasn't on purpose, that's still a jerk move because you're not thinking of those people who have put so much work into it. So like, it's still insulting because you're like, I'm not being appreciated for the work that I'm doing. And it really does kind of tie into the rumors of like the show Buffy being very cliquish. Joss had his favorites.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds very like cliquey, like very high school. Like, oh, these are the cool kids and these are the non-cool kids.
Yep, or the, exactly.
These are the theater kids and the popular kids.
Yep.
Ugh.
Yep. Well, and it's interesting too, again, because like, again, in The Freshman, I talk about how Tony had talks about how it was very hard starting in season four because you had the split between Joss being split between the two shows. And he goes, it started to feel click. He mentions like it felt like everybody was in their own like groups and stuff. And it stopped feeling less like a family. And that's when things really started to kind of fragment and stuff, which is just really sad.
Sad. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about wardrobe.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know this is going.
I know this one.
Yep. So in Katz's book, Cynthia Bergstrom, the costume designer on Buffy, talks about how she did Cordelia's wardrobe for the pilot of Angel, but that was it. She says, she was, in her words, manipulated by the production manager to do the episode for free, which is on like right away is just crappy.
Red flags, red
right,
flags.
Right, exactly. Flags. And that kind of sounds like that might have been what happened with Carrie Meyer as well, too. Like, they were like, hey, guys, do this pilot episode for free because they were desperate or they were trying to save on budget and stuff. And it's like not a good way to start your mm-hmm. series, you know? It would be her only episode. She says, one of my costumers went on to be the costume designer on Angel, which was interesting because Joss actually asked me to design both shows, and I was really excited. And the next thing I know, they're taking my set costumer, who had very little experience, and they're making her the costume designer. And I was just like, well, it's just one less headache for me. But I was looking forward to that, and I just thought, wow, what game are you playing here? First you offer me a show, then you take it away, and then you take my set costumer anyway. I would hear stories from my friend who worked on Angel, and it was brutal. And then, you know, she talks about, you know, how she heard about things about charisma and how she was treated at that time. And yeah, it's just a shame. It's so sad because like then you hear quotes about these people about how much they absolutely adore the show and what it stood for, like even on Buffy and stuff. And it just feels like the life was all sucked out of them.
Yeah.
All right. And so then the cast. Obviously, we have David Boreanaz as Angel, but we also have Cordelia. And Cordelia was a really interesting choice. She's not someone that I ever would have seen going over on Angel. And apparently, for most people, that's pretty much what they thought as well.
Yeah.
So Joss says this. He says, in the narrative of Angel at the beginning, Cordelia comes to LA to be an actress, which didn't go as well for her as it did for Charisma. When I first was developing the idea, David Greenwalt's first comment was, we've got to bring Charisma along because she doesn't belong in this world at all and she would have no patience for it, which I adore that. What a good idea. And so the juxtaposition of those two characters just seemed like a natural. With the Cordelia, we knew we were going to have to bring her down a peg by taking away her money and waking her up to the real world while still keeping what was great about her, which is her bluntness and lack of tolerance for brooding. And Charisma says, Joss and David were very aware of my anxiety issues, and I really appreciate them saying, okay, we have this spinoff and you have to be a part of it. So how can we put our best foot forward? Because we really want you here for this thing. I could have cried, like, really? You want me? Okay. And it was just such an honor and such a moment. And I think it's because they saw that my character resonated with people. They saw that I cared. They loved the character, and whatever it was I brought to it worked for them. So it was a win-win. At the same time, I was very concerned. I wanted to make sure that the writers were the ones that were involved with Buffy so as to ensure quality. Knowing that Joss and David, who happened to be my biggest fans, would be a big part of the show, I was immediately relieved, to say the least. Which we've talked a lot on Becoming Buffy, I think especially on the episode Homecoming, about how Charisma felt just really discouraged with where Cordelia was heading and with the arcs. She just felt like she was the resident mean girl. And like fans would come to the set to hang out with Sarah and Allie, but no one wanted to see her because she was mean to Buffy. And so it was very exhausting for her because she didn't feel appreciated for her work on top of, I'm sure, all of the behind the scenes bullying by Joss. So it like, it's just really sad to kind of hear her be like, oh, somebody wants me, because she's working so hard behind the scenes. I also love the quote by David Greenwalt where he's like, I am Cordelia. And then yeah. Charisma's like, he's not kidding.
That was always, he was like always Cordelia's voice, I feel like. David yeah. Greenwalt. Yeah.
Yep. Charisma also talks about how she was very nervous about the spinoff because they typically don't work out. And so she asked Joss if she could go back on Buffy if it didn't work out, which he said, I would never put you out there without a net. Of course, I don't know if logistics will back me up on that, but sure. To which Charisma says, I think he was kidding. He loves to make jokes that make actors insecure. He thinks it's really funny. He loves to say, by the way, you're fired. And then he gets a chuckle out of that. Then he says, every time I say that to an actor, they never laugh. And she goes, that's because it's really not funny, Joss.
Awkward.
Yeah. Oh, I run into so many comments from her and I'm like.
Yeah, he did it. He did that to Marty Noxon also.
Twice. And I've come across like two quotes from her. They did that about the script that she wrote for, I think, in Angel too. It's Joss and David Fury or David Fury or David Greenwalt. They'll both like
David Greenwalt.
They'll leave like a message on her answering machine, and it's such a form of bullying. Like, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And then Whistler was originally supposed to be included, like the first draft of the script had him in it. But Max Perlick, who had already been featured in the two Buffy episodes Becoming 1 and 2, in an interview he says, I never got called again. If they had called, I would have probably accepted because it was a great experience. And I think Joss is very original and talented, which surprised me because I'd always heard that he was busy.
That's what I heard as well. That's very interesting to hear. Apparently he never got a call. So they wrote a script because the script does exist. Like, you can read it. So they wrote a whole script including him, but didn't even ask him.
Yep.
To be.
Isn't that interesting?
That is very interesting.
Because I always thought it would make sense. Oh, he was not available. So that's why they picked Glenn Quinn. Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yep. So they decided to go with, obviously, Glenn Quinn, an Irish actor, and it allowed them to kind of delve a little bit into Angel's roots and give him an access to the powers that be. Glenn Quinn says, Doyle is a lunatic, basically. That's obviously why they hired me. He's like a gambler, hustler, Irish half-demon, half-human. When I was first cast, I got a few episodes sent over to the house, but I'm a pretty avid fan of vampire movies and Celtic mythology and whatnot, being from Ireland. I kind of grew up with all that kind of stuff, so I'm just really excited to actually walk in Doyle's shoes and basically have fun with him. It's going to be really interesting. And we will definitely talk about Doyle more later. I don't want to say too much about him, but.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the part that I'm very excited about. You ready, Leia?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm scared.
I feel like I've built this up so much. No, but it's really interesting. Like, when I was reading it, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this. Okay. So I want to talk about the music of Angel. And I get really geeky and excited when I talk about music because I have a degree in it. I also just adore it. I love it so much. But I especially love it on both Buffy and Angel because it's done so intentionally. Like, it tells a story with all of the themes and the motifs and all that stuff. So this is from Music, Sound, and Silence. It's a lot of quotes, but I promise it's super interesting. It's not a lot of jargon, so hang in there with me. So one of the beautiful things about music is it can majorly influence storytelling, sometimes without the viewer even knowing it. Music is also its own language, and you can often find hidden messages and clues of like what the story is trying to tell you, especially if the composer is really, really good at what they're doing. So the opening thing of Angel, which I personally adore, I actually like it better than the Buffy theme.
Me
like,
too.
It hits
so good.
It scratches an itch, man.
It really does. It's very fitting too. It's just like perfect.
It is perfect. Everything about it. So the opening theme was composed by Holly Knight and Darling Violetta, an alternative rock group that performed two songs during Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I think they performed in I Only Have Eyes for You. I think that was the episode. I don't remember which episode that they performed in the bronze, but Holly Knight was the music producer of the track. The next year, Angel invited bands to submit demos for the theme music to the show. They asked bands to use dark superhero ideas and cello rock. Darling Violetta watched pivotal Angel-related episodes of Buffy, such as Passion, becoming parts 1 and 2 for inspiration, which I'm like, you can tell. Eventually, mm-hmm. Whedon accepted Darling Violetta's interpretation of an Angel theme as the most suitable for the show. The theme has a slower tempo than the Buffy theme, as well as heavier use of acoustic instruments such as cello. All right, so this is from Music, Sound, and Silence. Darling Violetta's theme for Angel is, on the surface, entirely different from that of Buffy. Tempo, texture are certainly noticeably different from the driving forces of Buffy's music. However, not only are both themes in the same key, E minor, but the first four notes, which in Buffy are the notes from which the entire theme tune is derived, are also the first notes of Angel's theme. So ooh. I'm like, yeah, sorry. So Buffy goes, da, 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 and then Angel goes, da, 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 da. Do you hear it?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
I so, just got goosebumps.
I know. Okay. It keeps going. It gets better, right? Okay.
Oh my God.
So they're the exact same. So Angel goes up, Buffy goes down, but it's the same note. It's just an octave separated. So the fourth note, D, being transposed up an octave in Angel's music, rising instead of falling as it does in Buffy. Buffy's basic theme is too short to really be called a melody. Rather, it's a four-note motif. So, like, you know, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Like, it just kind of repeats over and over again. Angel's theme is considerably longer of a melody, and where the opening four notes echo the pitches of Buffy's motif, the final four notes of Angel echo its shape. So, like, remember, it goes da na 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 na. So, okay, so the last four notes go da na na na. It's the exact same notes as Buffy, like the first four notes of Buffy.
Oh my God.
Isn't that amazing? Okay, so hang on, it gets even better.
Oh my God.
The similarities of key and motif between Buffy and Angel might be read as thinly disguised means of reasserting the eternal bond between the two characters. Although they are separated into two series, apart from anything else, they will always be connected. The shared motif stands as a symbol of their common mission, of the emotional connection between them, and also of their separation. The differences between these themes, however, are just as interesting and speak more clearly to the idea of music and identity. So they talk about the fact that the beginning of the Angel theme is the same as Buffy, then it deviates and goes off on its own thing, but it always comes back. Oh, isn't that so cool?
That is so cool.
It's amazing. And it speaks
that is really
to
cool.
It speaks to the fact that their bond and their relationship is intertwined down to the music.
Of course. Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That
it's
is
so
really,
beautiful.
Really cool.
I did not even know that. I don't even know how I did not notice that. It's like, yeah, it's crazy. All right, so I have more.
Oh my God.
I know.
Sarah, you did work.
Hopefully this will be interesting for people to listen to as well.
That was so interesting about the
music,
though.
Isn't that cool?
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
Buffy and Angel are forever, period.
Exactly. Okay. Like, it's literally in the music. Can't yeah. be denied. It's canon, dude.
It's yep. canon.
One of the most striking differences between the two theme tunes is their mood. Buffy's theme is played by an amplified rock band, and the melodic line is carried by an increasingly frenetic electric guitar. Angel's theme is more obviously lyrical, less frenetic, and although the guitars and drum kit of the rock band are included in the ensemble, they are not foregrounded so dramatically. Instead, acoustic instruments are also present, with the piano and cello dominating the melodic line. So the writer goes on to talk about this is due to a couple of things, one being their background and influence. Buffy's a young modern girl who's influenced more by rock music that you would find at the Bronze, while Angel's an 18th century Irish vampire. There's also specific coding due to what kind of vampire he is, the soulful, tragic hero vampire as opposed to the devil may care type, and they compare to Spike, who's more like the rock type of vampire. The book draws parallels to Neil Jordan's film version of Interview with a Vampire, and the vampire in there, Lewis, as well as Dracula and Capella's film, and then Tim Burton's Batman, all share musical similarities in their themes, written in a minor key with classical Hollywood orchestral scoring that marks them out as a tragic romantic hero. So it's very, like, it's kind of an archetype of where they're going with Angel. However, aside from the temporal codings in the music, it can be argued without much difficulty that Buffy's music is coded male and Angel's is coded female. And okay, so I'm going to explain a little bit about what that means by coded male and coded female. So there was a study done in Sweden between 1979 and 1986 by a guy named Philip Tagg, where he took a group of students, 70% of which had no musical training, and they largely had never listened to these tracks before. He had them listen to like 10 different theme tunes from a range of films. And then he asked them to write down any verbal visual associations, as they're called VVAs, that occurred to them in response. So the test generated considerable data from which various analyses have resulted. And you can actually look up all the information in his paper, An Anthropology of Stereotypes in TV Music. Basically, it's an analysis of gender associative responses to certain kinds of music. So they had this group sit down and go, okay, which music sounds like it's masculine, which music sounds like it's feminine, basically. So four of the songs they said sounded masculine and four sounded feminine, and then the other two were kind of like ambiguous. They then analyzed the commonalities between each of these songs, and this is the list that they came up with. So the music that they were like, okay, this is type-coded as male, was music that had a faster tempo. The rhythm was more, had more syncopation, repeated notes, phrasing, those like staccato, which is quick repeating notes. The dynamics were the same, like the same volume. It didn't get louder or softer. There's a lot of electric guitar, synthesizer, trumpets, percussion, brass, things like that. So that was considered male coded. Female coded was slower. The notes were longer, they're appearing slower, more regular rhythm, normal dottings, divisions of note group, legato, which means smooth and flowing. The phrases got louder than softer, and the instruments were strings, violin, flute, piano, woodwind instruments, things like that. So based on that, it's pretty easy to see that Angel's music is more type-coded as female and Buffy's is type-coded as male. And if you've listened to Becoming Buffy, we've talked a lot about how that's very intentional because Buffy's all about subverting expectations. The idea that this blonde girl's going to get captured and eaten by these vampires, but then she turns it around and suddenly she's taken on the traditionally male role of being the one that can go out there and kick the vampire's butt. So the book goes on to talk about how even the structure of both shows codes Buffy and Angel as masculine and feminine, respectively. Angel is much more dependent on his team in the sense that he relies on the visions and stopping things before they happen, versus Buffy often acts alone, which is more of like the acting alone is more of a traditionally masculine type of a role. One of Angel's major themes is that of found family, which is a coded female type theme. The book says this formulation of a cooperative, mutually interdependent group then is one aspect of female coding in Angel that can be seen mirrored between the musical and narrative constructs. Yet there is still a mix of both masculine and feminine coding in the way Angel is constructed as a character. And they talk about how his name is gender ambivalent, like it could go for both male and female. Him not being able to bite people or have sex with the woman he loves doesn't permit him to act as a classically romantic male heroic character.
Right.
He is forbidden both in his primary functions as a vampire and as the romantic lead. In both cases, getting the girl is not an available option. But the book goes on to say, yet just as Buffy is all woman, if a new kind of heroine, so Angel is clearly a romantic, heroic male figure within both narratives. He is desired by almost every single woman on the show, envied by the men, swooned over by the fates, Angel, anyone? And the music does, in fact, remind us of this. So during the title sequence of Angel, at the point where David Boreanaz' name, like his credit, is shown over several shots of Angel in action, that's when the female cello is actually replaced as the principal melodic instrument by the electric guitar. So if you'll notice, the electric guitar jumps in as soon as David Boreanaz like smashes through that door frame. And then it actually ends as soon as Cordelia's image appears and goes back to the cello. So it's nice. Very interesting how they're like showing that male codedness even within there. And so they talk about how the ambivalence of Angel's various dualities, the man slash vampire, the love lover slash the celibate, vulnerable slash immortal, are clearly reflected in the male slash female duality of his music's construction, which is really, really interesting. I know this is like super, like, does this make sense?
This is so cool.
Okay,
it makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, good. And I think this is even more interesting when you think about the fact that, like, what was it that made Joss decide to give Angel his own, or give David his own show? It was him being able to embody a female in I Only Have Eyes for You, which is super interesting.
Which is so funny. Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember all of the quotes where Joss is talking about how it really struck him that David was able to be so emotionally vulnerable in what is more a traditionally feminine role.
I remember those quotes. Yeah.
And I think that that speaks a lot. And I personally believe that Angel is very much written in the female gaze.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right. So in conclusion, Buffy and its spinoff, Angel, have attracted attention because of the way in which they transgress boundaries. This is nothing so simple as blurring. If a boundary such as male and female codings in music is blurred, then it loses its ability to reveal anything meaningful. Instead, Buffy and Angel acknowledge and even rely on the fact that the boundaries are there, but cross them anyway in order to reveal a world more subtle and complex in its construction than film and TV horror narratives have historically allowed. On one hand, this reflects the subtleties and complexities of the world in which we ourselves live, and the extent to which the perception of gender roles has changed. Given that the mainstream cultural shifts with regard to real-world gender roles originated in the 1960s and 70s, the moment for art to catch up with life is as it's presenting female toughness and male sensitivity in a constructive and sympathetic light was perhaps overdue. But it's nonetheless a tribute to the innovation and creativity of Joss and his team of creative collaborators that they succeeded in capturing the popular imagination with characters and scenarios that challenged the status quo so effectively. The subversion of long-maintained construct appears to extend to every level of Buffy and Angel, and so it should doubtless not surprise us that it can also be found so clearly in the music that identifies the title characters.
That is so cool. You wouldn't, like, that's not something that, like, you would ever think of. You know what I mean? It's so right. It's like subtle, and it's like more intentional, and it's really cool. Yeah, I really like that.
I love that you can listen to the music and you can get an idea of where they're trying to go with it. But if you dig a little bit deeper, you're just like, oh my goodness, this is so rich. Yeah. And you just get a fuller understanding of where they're trying to go with the character. And I don't know. And that's why we love these shows, guys. That's why we love them, because they do transcend boundaries and they are so rich. So that's it. That's all I have. End of my dissertation.
That's it, Sarah. That's it.
All 10 pages.
No, that was such good information. Oh my God.
And now we're ready to talk about the show, like each episode, the show itself, and actually get into it. And I don't know, that made me more pumped to talk about the show. Because, I mean, if they put that much thought into just starting the show, imagine what we're going to unearth and dig up as we get into each episode. Like,
I agree. I think Angel is like, it's a completely different show than Buffy. And I think a lot of the times we always pay like attention to the metaphors and like everything in Buffy. But I feel like Angel it's so rich for the exact reasons that like you listed. And I feel like even episode per episode, like I feel like we're going to be discovering so many things and so many like metaphors, so many messages that are being like told to us. And I'm really excited to get into it. Yeah.
I agree. And hopefully you guys, you listeners are too. Hopefully, like, we said some things that you're like, oh, I didn't know this about the show. And like, that is something, like, that's my goal, is to be able to give us all a richer understanding. I want to learn new stuff. I think it's so fascinating. Helps me love and appreciate the show more. And I'm just excited to talk about like the characters that are introduced, the things that they bring up, the moral dilemmas, and just to love the character of Angel so much more, because I think that obviously there's a whole bunch of stuff that we just have not even tapped into and are just now discovering. So
I'm excited to get into it. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Especially with you, Sarah, because you are just.
Thanks.
I just want to say I'm excited to like go on this journey with you in particular, because I feel like you clearly enjoy diving into things deeply. And I love that. No, I love that, because I feel like, you know, I've seen the show so many times. Like even me, I've seen Angel all the way through so many times. I love the show. I know it really well. Almost as well, like as I know Buffy, but I feel like we're gonna learn a lot of new things together, and I'm like so excited to watch it with you, because I feel like you have an eye for things that you wouldn't like think to look for. You know, like you're just great, Sarah.
Aw, thanks. You're pretty and great too. I'm excited. Everyone's like, get on with the show.
I know. Get on. I love Sarah and I'm excited. No, it's going to be really fun, because yeah, I feel like you're going to like make me see things in like a different way. And
good. I hope so.
Yeah. Going into this with like an open mind, and yeah, it's going to be so fun.
And I'm excited because you know the show so much more than I do. So I like gaining a whole new perspective. I think that, yeah, you have just invaluable insight. So yeah, hopefully you listeners are excited too. Like this is just going to be so fun. And hopefully this episode, I feel like, has gotten me so excited. Not that I wasn't before, but just I'm like, oh my goodness, there's more to learn. There's more to discover. And oh, there's so much goodness to talk about. So thanks so much for listening, guys. And we will see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.